This is Wisconsin Public Radio on NPR One.
A challenge to Wisconsin's abortion ban could already be making its way to the state Supreme Court. The law was first passed in 1849 and went back into effect last June when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. In our series, How We Got Here, Abortion in Wisconsin Since 1849, WPR reporters are exploring how the ban came to be and how Wisconsinites have lived with and without it since. In part three of our series, Sarah Lear and Rob Mentzer explain Wisconsin's path to legal abortion began with an arrest.
Here's what we know. On a Saturday in September 1969, a 23-year-old grad student walked into an office in downtown Milwaukee.
She paid Dr. Sidney Babbitts $900 in cash, and Babbitts gave her an abortion. Later, Babbitts took the elevator with the woman down to the lobby. A police officer was there waiting for them.
Michael McCann was Milwaukee County's newly elected district attorney.
A woman was stopped coming out of that office and inquired about whether she had an abortion, confirmed that she'd had an abortion, and I don't think she was ever charged.
She wasn't charged, but she appeared in a Milwaukee County courtroom that same afternoon. McCann needed the woman's testimony so he could get a search warrant for Babbitts' office. That allowed police to recover evidence and eventually to place Babbitts under arrest. In the court transcript, the woman initially declines to answer any questions. Then the judge gives her immunity from prosecution.
She describes how Babbitts used dilation and curettage to terminate her pregnancy at about 9 weeks. McCann, a lifelong Democrat, is now in his 80s. He's also a devout Catholic. He's open about how his faith informs his opposition to issues including abortion and capital punishment.
I have a deep respect for human life and a suspicion, without being a vast bunch of history, that whenever human life is diminished, there's a price paid for it.
To McCann, the case seems straightforward. Wisconsin had banned abortions for more than 100 years, and he had evidence that Babbitts had performed an abortion.
But in the end, things got more complicated. Babbitts sued, and a panel of three federal judges took up the case. That forced the state to defend the abortion law itself.
The issue became, you know, what were her rights? Did she have a right to have an abortion? If she had a right to have an abortion, then Babbitts had not violated the law by giving her an abortion.
By the 1960s, campaigns to legalize abortion were growing all over the country. But historian Dave Garrow says they were mostly grassroots.
These local efforts were surprisingly uncoordinated at any national level or by any nationwide organization.
In Wisconsin, one of those local leaders was Edie Rhine. Today, Rhine is 89. In the late 60s, she was a stay-at-home mom living in suburban Whitefish Bay. She founded the Wisconsin Committee to Legalize Abortion and started speaking about the issue on radio and TV. That's how she gained a public profile.
I started getting phone calls from people asking if I knew where to get an abortion, and I didn't know. And then one day I got a phone call from somebody anonymous who gave me a phone number and said, you can give this phone number and people can get abortions.
When she was interviewed by the Milwaukee Sentinel in 1970, Rhine told a reporter she never told women how to do anything illegal. But that wasn't true. Rhine used to send women to Babbitts and other doctors, many of whom did abortions secretly.
I was on the telephone a lot. I was on the phone a lot. And my 9-year-old used to pick up on it, and she used to imitate me, and she'd say, how far along are you?
But the calls themselves were serious.
A lot of the women who called would say to me, I have so many kids, I can't deal with another one. And my husband will not use birth control. And, you know, they couldn't get birth control for themselves.
Birth control was illegal for unmarried women in Wisconsin. Often, even married women couldn't get it without their husband's permission. Garrow says abortions were relatively common at the time, even though prosecutions were rare.
As a general rule of thumb, only doctors whose medical practice left something to be desired, you know, resulting in injuries to a woman or in rare cases a fatality, generally only doctors who weren't at the top of the game were the ones who got into trouble.
During the 1960s, Garrow says lawyers started seeing a new avenue to legalization. They pointed to the Supreme Court case Griswold v. Connecticut, which established a right to contraceptives for married couples. Attorneys use that same right to privacy to argue for abortion rights in cases including Babbitt's and eventually Roe.
Roe v. Wade was by no means a singular case. There were dozens and dozens of these cases, including Babbitt's from Wisconsin, from all around the country.
Ryan's group submitted an amicus brief in the Babbitt's case. It argued Wisconsin's abortion ban violated a woman's constitutional right to privacy. In 1970, the federal judges hearing the case agreed. They found that the right to privacy lasted up until quickening, or when a pregnant person feels fetal movement. That's usually about 4 months into pregnancy. The ruling effectively struck down part of the law that had been in place since the mid-19th century.
But initially, the judges did not order the state to stop prosecuting Babbitt's.
The case was tied up in appeals for years, and McCann and the state attorney general kept moving forward with attempts to bring Babbitt's to trial.
The ongoing proceedings created an environment of legal uncertainty. In 1971, a doctor named Alfred Kennan opened an abortion clinic in Madison. Just months after it opened, police searched the clinic and the district attorney filed charges against Kennan.
That was a scary time. It felt like a police state or something, that the DA could raid a legal clinic and take all the records.
That's Annie Laurie Gaylor, who was 15 at the time of the raid. Gaylor's mom, Ann Nicole Gaylor, was a Madison-based activist who worked with Ryan.
Kennan's attorneys argued abortion had been legal in Wisconsin since the Babbitt's decision in 1970. And eventually, Kennan prevailed, though not before Gaylor's mother was subpoenaed by Wisconsin's Board of Medical Examiners about her work referring people to abortions.
Gaylor's now 67 years old, but she still has vivid memories of the attitude she encountered when she followed her mom around the country advocating for abortion rights.
I would often be left at a pro-choice table, and I was 13, 14, 15, and invariably some middle-aged or older man would come over indignant and say, if some 16-year-old tart goes out and gets herself pregnant, you know, she shouldn't be off the hook. She should have put an aspirin between her legs.
Decades later, Gaylor can't bring herself to read the Supreme Court's full decision overturning national protections for abortion. She worries that, in many ways, Wisconsin is heading back to the 60s.
Now, more than a year after Roe was overturned, Babbitt's may have new relevance. Wisconsin's attorney general references the Babbitt's case in an ongoing lawsuit. He's suing to block enforcement of the same 19th century law that led to Babbitt's arrest. Part of his case notes that in Babbitt's v. McCann, federal judges have already found that law to be unconstitutionally broad. He hopes judges toss out the state's near total ban on abortions, just like they did in 1970. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Rob Mentzer.
And I'm Sarah Lear.